And we're live. There we go. There we go. A lot of messing around with the audio.
Yeah, that was weird.
Huh. Well, we're good now. We're good now. What are all these pictures and paintings in the back?
This is my kid's playroom. It's kind of the only quiet spot if I can plug him in front of the TV for a while. So
looking a little loud in the background. What's this one with the person laying on the side? Are they okay?
Oh, it's a mermaid, of course. Clearly, yes.
What about the one next to the mermaid? That one's also a mermaid? The one with the grass and the tulips?
No. Who knows? It probably is a mermaid. I don't know. A person, a swimmer. Yeah.
They're smiling, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, it's a happy time.
As long as they're okay. How's everything going? How's your day?
Good. I was busy, but good. Just kind of running around with the kids and working on some business stuff.
Gotcha.
My day off, which is nice. How about you?
Oh, day off, huh?
Yeah.
We like those. We like those days off. Yes. You said running around with the kids, though?
Yeah, kids are home. They're kind of going to summer camp activities throughout the day, et cetera, so just driving all over.
How do you switch that on and off with your husband?
He is amazing. He is a very good partner. He's definitely not that deadbeat dad that you always hear about, people complaining. Like, he actually is my, like, activity coordinator, I say, with the kids. So he's the one that usually knows what needs to be signed up for. He does the sign-ups. He tells me the schedule, and I go wherever he tells me. So
wow, that's very proactive. That's great.
Yes. So dads, you can do that stuff. You know, you don't have to be the clueless dad that's not involved and doesn't know what's going on. You can take an active role, and it's really nice. We're both surgeons, so we try to just really split things up, you know, pretty evenly, I'd say, compared to most families. And we try to restructure our time. So
yeah,
you know, we're not necessarily working the typical 8 to 5 or 6 to 5 or whatever, you know, surgeon's hours are. Right now, for example, I work 3 days a week. He works 4 days a week this summer, but he'll usually in the school year, he'll go a little bit later, like 8:30, and drop the kids off in the morning a couple days a week and pick the kids up from school a couple hours earlier than normal. And so that just helps a lot.
So 3 days a week, 4 days a week. How is that? I'm just going to flip my view right here so that we're both facing different directions. I'm starting to do something. I'm noticing the little tweaks that I can do, like on the post on Instagram, so I can switch it. But wait, so tell me, how is that? I mean, I know a few people, but he's ENT, I thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How where'd you guys meet? How did that all come together?
We met when I was a first year dental student and he was a second year med student.
Oh, okay.
At church. So
church? No way. Wait a minute. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Very romantic story at church, you know? He was teaching Sunday school and I was just won over right from that moment. He had this giant mop of curly hair, spiritual giant. What can I say? He won me over.
That's amazing. Which dental school were you in at that time?
University of Iowa.
Right. Iowa. So he was in Iowa's medical school. And that's great. So you guys, were you in the medical school classes as well or Iowa dental school? Yeah. Separate.
No, separate. Yeah.
I was going to say that
we took a lot of
perfect.
The same classes, but not with the same teachers or at the same time.
Okay. And so you were off today. Any good cases this week?
You know, I don't even know. I'm not one to like really look that ahead on the schedule.
I hear
Unless there's something like crazy coming up, I'll be prepared. But, you know, I'm kind of used to what's coming up and I just don't sweat it too much, good or bad. Is that bad? I don't know.
And which days are you working if it's 3 days a week?
I usually work Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Nice. Okay. So today's Monday. That's why you're off today. And then you're off again Wednesday. Did you get to pick those days or those were just the lighter days? How did it come down to Tuesday, Thursday?
I picked those days. I feel like Mondays are always terrible.
Gloomy. Nobody likes the Monday.
Back from the weekend and it's just like you get hammered with all this stuff. So if I could just skip over that day altogether. I think most oral surgeons, you know, you probably have seen work Fridays just because people want the weekend to recover.
Yeah.
Taking Monday off is a nice way to have a 3-day weekend. And then I like having the day in the middle. It's kind of hard to be gone a really long stretch of time because patients have problems. And if you aren't in for too long a period, my nurse is like bothering me all the time with patients calling me during the day. So I feel like kind of interspersing it in the middle of the week helps a lot with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then your husband works similar days, same days, probably different days, right?
So this summer he's taking Tuesdays off, which is nice. So we only need childcare for a couple days a week, which is really nice.
That is
this
nice.
Past school year, he was working like 8:30 to 2:30. so he could drop the kids off at school and pick the kids up. So he was working every day, but on days he wasn't in the OR, he was able to pick them up. So we only had to have a babysitter one day a week, which was amazing.
Not bad.
Either I'd be home on Monday or Wednesday, or he'd be taking them to and from school. And so I just think we get like in our head, like about how our doctoring has to look. You know, we have these expectations of what the profession demands on us. Right. And not everyone has the flexibility. Not everyone's their own boss. Not everyone has a practice where they can do what they want. But
right.
I'm a big proponent of living your life for you. And when you're a happy doctor, you're better able to take care of your patients and your practice and to like really show up. I think we start getting that burnout when we're just like in the grind right. and we're doing things the way we always thought we're supposed to do it, or the way our mentor said we had to do it, or the way the boss said to do it. I think when you can really make those decisions for yourself and like think outside the box, like, is this really how I want to work? Do I have to work all these hours? You know, I've had some like male doctors say to me, because I actually got illegally fired from my first job in private practice after getting pregnant. And so I made a video about it on social media, and I had some people saying like, I'd love to stay home with my kids. Well, you can. I mean, as long as it's your choice, like no one's forcing you to go to work, just like, but because I'm a woman, like, well, it's good. You could be forced to go home, or you could be home with the kids more, but like you as a dad could decide to do that too. Like it's all choices. It's choices about what's your priority and how much money do you need to make, et cetera. Yeah. And I think when you really are mindful about those, we can like really take back control of our lives and hopefully make our life the way we want.
Right. Right. I think the one thing is some of the bigger organizations, DSOs, I do know of a few that like they kind of look at their least producing, least working surgeons, at least from, you know, oral surgery standpoint. Yeah. I don't know enough about from the dental standpoint, although I'm sure it's even worse, but yeah. kind of like to phase out those least producing surgeons, to phase out those mm-hmm. least producing dentists. So I think that because you own your own practice, right?
I am in a very large multi-specialty physicians group. So
it's multi-specialty. Yeah, yeah. But and isn't your husband kind of in, isn't the ENT connected?
We're both in the same practice. Yeah. So even though I'm technically an employee, they give us a lot of free rein. Like as long as we're pulling our weight and hitting our production, they don't really care.
Yeah. We chatted about that, and that's kind of how you were able to kind of morph and make sure that you had the schedule that you want. Right.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. If you work for a group, sometimes that autonomy, that choice of your schedule is tough. That's why.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a great position that you got, you know, that's
like not everyone has the luxury of doing that, you know, like your boss may dictate hours, et cetera, but a lot of us are our own boss or, you know, are in a situation where we can choose. And I think sometimes we just are so stuck in that it has to be 8 to 5. Well, maybe it could be 10 to 7 or Saturday morning, or, you know, I think there's some out of the box thinking that can be done sometimes, not always, but
actually, you know, that's a great point. I was just talking with someone today and I want to see what your thoughts are. So I'm trying to stay away from weekends. Let's just do Monday through Friday. And I actually do want to try and get that 8 to 5. It sounds like some of the staff they don't want to work more than those hours. So they might push it 8 to 4. I really kind of want to get those extra days, 8 to 5. But you just brought up the 10 to 7. And what I wanted to try and do is make that 10 to 7 day on the Monday. And then the rest of the week, 8 to 5, 8 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? It kind of allows you to maximize your weekend. And then people that need to work during the day but need to see a dentist on Monday, an oral surgeon specifically on Monday, kind of gives you them that opportunity of those work hours afterwards. Mm-hmm. Just my thoughts. Do you have any thoughts about that? Do you think it would work? It wouldn't work?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's definitely an interesting thought. I've heard two thoughts. Like I've had friends more like the dental model where they've worked later hours. And sometimes it sounds like people love it. And sometimes it sounds like hypothetically people love it. And then when it comes down to it, they don't feel like making the appointment after a long day at work or something. So like no shows and things like that. But especially if you're in a saturated market, I think that could be a way of, you know, distinguishing yourself from other people.
That might
certainly be. People like not having to miss work. You know, work is time is money. So if they can come at times otherwise, but yeah, it'd be fun to try maybe.
Yeah. It theoretically would work for hopefully them and my lifestyle. So I'm hoping that works, but yeah. All right. They let me try it. Cause apparently the staff doesn't want to do any late days. And I'm like, well, wait, but the boss told me he wants a late day. So I'm trying to, we're meeting in the middle here.
It's tricky when you push back against staff. They sometimes wield more power than you would like.
Yeah, and I want to work with the staff. I'm not trying to work against them. I don't know. Well,
some of it, too, you have to realize, like, so you come in 8 to 5, but they have to be there early setting up and, you know, late cleaning up and stuff, too. So maybe having, like, an early person and a late person can be helpful.
Or that, yeah. Yeah, so that they could bring the kids to daycare or pick them up from daycare. Yeah.
Right. Maybe they can choose which works better for them.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like spitballing ideas like this.
What's your new practice going to be like?
He's got, I think it's 8 offices now. I worked in my contract. Oh, wow. I'll be at one office Monday through Friday, and it's 9 to 5. But like I was saying, I want to push 8 to 5. You know, let's work here. You know, I'm young. I got some fresh legs.
Yeah.
And it's owned by one gentleman, and yeah, it's all private, so that's nice. And yeah,
is there a top opportunity to buy in and become partner, or is this just going to be like associateship long term, or
associate for 2 years? I'm gonna get everything I got. That's why I think adding on some hours, show initiative, and then we're doing the marketing for the practice now, and I need to work a lot more on the marketing because I want to work on getting implant patient leads to the practice. And right now, Facebook has not been delivering what we want it to, so that's. That's a project that's going to be on the books for a while.
I think implants are tricky. I think I'm in my third practice now, so I've kind of been through the transition multiple times. For me, I found it takes like a good year before you really start getting your implant practice going, at least in my experience. It takes a while for the dentist to get to know you and to see your work and to start trusting you enough to send something like that to you. And like, it's one thing to have a tooth taken out. It's another to have this implant that they have to restore from this strange doctor that they don't know. So building those relationships, I think, is really important. I was pretty naive at first. I feel like you're a good communicator and you're a smart guy, so you probably like figured this out already. But like, I wish I would have done a better job just like calling and following up and, hey, I've got this case and that you sent me. I'm really excited. And I was thinking this, is that okay? Or do you have any preferences? Or, hey, you know, now that's restored, do you have any feedback for me? You know, is it too palatal or too deep? Or, you know, if you have anything like that, let me know. And really just letting them feel like you're that friendly guy that they can shoot off a text when they need something. I feel like that kind of relationship really helps, because are you going to want to send it to just like the dude down the street that you've heard his name, or like the guy that's a pretty cool, friendly guy that you're kind of friends with? You know, I think those kind of things. Yeah. Make a big difference.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Can we get into, you said this is your third practice now. Can I hear a little bit more about your first and second? And then you mentioned a little bit of the transition period time, but can we go into the details a little bit? Can I hear the story?
Yeah. What do you want to know?
Well, what was the first place that you were at?
So I was still living in Iowa City, where the University of Iowa is. Mm-hmm. And my husband was a perpetual student. He was doing MD PhD program.
Oh.
And then, so he started before me, and that's like a 7 or 8 year program just to get through school. And then he did a 5 year ENT residency and then a 1 year fellowship. So we were doing the training thing for a very long time, you know, pretty saturated market with university and everyone who likes university and wants to stay. So I was kind of coming up on graduation from residency, and I had nowhere to go. Like, everything I'd been looking at had fallen through. Originally, I was going to go to the university, but that didn't work out. And so I finally found a practice that was 75 miles away, where the doctor was having some back problems, and it was a 2-man practice, but he needed some help. So I ended up coming to the practice. He actually ended up having emergency back surgery, so the practice had closed. So I came and reopened that practice.
Oh, great.
I was there by myself for a couple of years. It was really great in a lot of ways. A lot of people steer away from rural practice, but in some ways it was amazing. Like, I just showed up. I had a full schedule from day one. I got paid very well. I paid off my student loans in the first year. It was just able to hit the ground running, full schedule every day. We didn't really have to market or advertise because, you know, we were kind of only shop in town and within like 60 mile radius. So that was really a great way to just get my skills up and practice and just be able to, you know, do what I knew how to do and get my confidence up right out of the bat. So
I'm sorry, could you, how long was it? You said it closed and you reopened it. How long was that closed for? Not very long.
Probably 3 or 4 months.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like 3 or 4 Weeks, months.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But people knew where it was and everything. So opening it back.
Yeah. Well, by the time I came, everyone was really excited that I was there because I needed the doctor, you know.
Do you remember, so, was it a flat base salary percentage that you like?
I had a pretty high base salary. And then if I hit that base, then it was like 30% of our collections after that.
30. Okay. Okay. 30. Okay. Yeah. But you crushed it. You paid off your loans in 1 year. Jesus, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. So, I mean, talk about freedom. So, like, you are probably going in the opposite situation, like being in New York, and you're probably like pretty saturated. You know, I don't know the dynamics there, but, but, you know, it's just interesting. I mean, a lot of people like snub their nose off of being in the rural Midwest, you know, like when I go to the big events and where are you from? And Illinois, and everyone thinks I'm from Chicago. Like, no, not actually Chicago. And then they're kind of like, ooh. But, you know, the lifestyle that we live is really nice. It's just so much flexibility and people are just really glad you're there. And, you know, we don't have to do a lot of marketing, or I don't have to take bagels or donuts to dentists. I hear people buying like Louis Vuitton bags for referrals. Like,
that's a good one.
Too much of that.
That's a lot though. Louis Vuitton.
You're like, Louis Vuitton, good idea. And I'm like, I would never.
That's a hefty price to be for your referring dentist. I mean, if they send you a lot of implant patients, a lot of all in X's, I would consider that. I would do that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you got to have a rewards program, like, you know, the frequent flyer program. You get points and then you can get the.
You got 1,000 points today.
Right.
I like that. I wonder do you know of anyone that does that? I don't know anyone that does. That's.
I mean, you heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
So what do you, that's right. The second practice, were you just there until he kind of recovered from his back surgery or?
No, he tried to come back, but he had too much pain. He never recovered. So he never really came back. So I was there and I recruited my own replacement unbeknownst to me. So I tried to recruit someone else to come because it was, again, a two and a half man practice and I'd been there alone. I wanted to cut back a little because I just had twins and I was driving 75 miles each direction. I was just hoping to cut back a little bit. And then once they hired him, they let me go as thank you for taking maternity leave, unfortunately. Oh, yeah, that was exciting. And then my next practice, I was again kind of just stuck. I'm like, I'm in this oversaturated market. I don't really have anywhere to go. I'd had a few practices that had wanted to recruit me, but the timing was just off since I was under contract before that. And by the time I was available, you know, they didn't have spots anymore. So I remembered that a couple guys that I knew from residency who adjuncted had a satellite practice. And so I just contacted them like, any chance you would like me to manage your satellite practice so you don't have to drive down there? And thank goodness that worked out. And that was really a good fit for that period of time. So
solid. Yeah.
2 days. So I went down to 2 days a week. That's kind of all they could manage at the satellite. But then they were able to really focus on building their implant practice in Cedar Rapids. Which was, you know, a bigger market and they didn't have to spend their time coming down there. And again, it was really busy and the patients were all lined up and I just kind of got in and did my job. And it was an upgrade because instead of 75 mile commute, it was like a 50 mile commute, you know, upgrades.
A lot of miles. How far would it take you to get to a 50 mile practice or a 75 mile practice? That's at least.
I mean, luckily it was like minute per minute, you know, like it wasn't be like stuck in traffic. You just hit the road and 50 miles, 50 minutes later type of thing. You'd be so 45 there.
45 minutes one way and then over an hour for the other practice.
Yeah.
That's a long commute. That's a long commute. Yeah. Working at the offices though, which one did you kind of like better? Which one was kind of. And why?
I don't know. I mean, I loved working at both of them. I didn't have to worry about anything but doing my job. You know, I'd show up and people were so glad I was there and I had a great mix of patients and the staff were all wonderful. I really liked both of them, besides like the drama from the first, but.
Of course, there's always drama in the practices though, right? Do you have any drama over there now?
There's always some kind of drama. I mean, that's kind of just with the reality of working with people. It's different kinds of drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just was an uncomfortable situation. They were not happy that I got pregnant, nor were they happy that I took time off, et cetera. So yeah, when you start getting into legal action, et cetera, you know.
Legal action? Not a good situation. It went that direction?
Yeah.
What? You got pregnant. That's allowed. I don't get it. Taking time off?
Yeah.
Wasn't that in your contract? Allowed to take time off?
Some or not, I didn't talk about maternity leave in my contract because I was too afraid to talk about it. And that's like a tricky thing. Like, you should talk about it. 100% you should talk. And I have people come to me all the time like, hey, what would you do? And I'm like, I don't know. Because really, you should talk about it, right? But the second you bring it up, sometimes that's enough to like make people scared and don't want to hire. You know, they get a whiff of you maybe wanting to have kids. And is that legal? No. Is it fair? No. Does it mean it doesn't happen? Absolutely not. It happens all the time. It's happened to many of my friends. So I don't know. I'd love to talk to a very savvy lawyer who could talk about inserting that in there, you know, in just a casual way. But yeah, so I made the purposeful choice not to ask just because I was too afraid.
Yeah. Did you have an employment attorney to review the contract with?
I didn't have an employment attorney. I did have like a financial guy who does a lot of practice transitions, et cetera.
Yeah. Because that might actually be the way is in the negotiating phase between the attorneys of both parties, that it might be a good attorney-to-attorney conversation. Because then you don't have to bring it up. And then they have to figure that out and they can't.
It should just be a policy thing, right? That a business has a policy or a maternity policy is this. But I don't know. It's a scary thing to ask.
Yeah, no, that's...
Sometimes. I mean, it shouldn't be, but...
That's an essential topic because it's like, what do you do? So, no, I'm glad we touched that. I didn't even think of that, how hard that can be. It never got brought up on my contract. So it's like, how would I know, you know?
Yeah, they didn't bring that up.
No, they didn't.
They didn't ask that. Well, it's tricky. I feel like for men, you know, like, oh, do you want to have a family? That's often looked at as a good thing, right? Like, oh, he's stable, he's responsible, he's contributing to society, you know, by, you know, being a parent. Like, that's a great thing. But as a woman, it's a red flag. It's like, oh, I don't know if she's going to be committed. And what if she doesn't want to work as much? And what happens when she takes time off? Like, these are all... I hate to even say red flags. That makes it, you know, it's challenging. And as an employer myself, it's not that it's not hard. I've had people go on maternity leave or when they're nursing. Is it convenient that every day at 10:30, my assistant has to go pump, you know? No, but it's the right thing to do. And, you know, we accommodate and make it happen, but you know, it's challenging, but I can see why people just want to get people the boot, you know?
Right.
It's tempting. And I think a lot of people do, a lot more than you'd think. And I also think from an employer standpoint, you should be a little smart about it because it is a liability when you do that. The odds of you getting in trouble, I think, are low, but you could.
Right. When you go to the office these days, what's the predominant procedures that you're doing? Is it dental velar? Do you anything crazy? What's your favorite stuff to do day to day?
I'm, you know, heavy bread and butter. I'm not doing too much. It's too crazy these days. I do a lot of biopsies for some reason. Like,
really?
So many. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's because we're on the Mississippi River and our water is probably giving us cancer or something. I don't know. I remember when we first moved here and like the first 4 months, my husband and I, between the two of us, had diagnosed like 5 or 6 tongue cancers. And I remember going through all of residency and just seeing like a couple, you know, and I was like, what in the world? There are days I do 6 or 7 biopsies in a day.
Man.
I do at least one a day, which is surprising because, you know, the University of Iowa where you're, you know, a university, you're drawing from the whole state. And sometimes outside you think you'd be seeing like the weird biopsy stuff. But I mean, every day, man, that's me, a pathology queen.
And do you do any of the benign pathology yourself? Do you bring anything to the OR? Does your husband do a lot of head and neck, or you guys send that to?
We'll do a lot of benign pathology, do a lot of cysts and, you know, excisions and things like that. My husband, he does some head and neck. He's technically pediatric, but he does do general. Sometimes if it's a big case, we'll both go together, which is just kind of fun and nice to have extra set of hands.
Yeah, so that's fun.
It's nice to be able to just, hey, how would you do this? Or you want to come help me cut on this guy's neck and things like that. You know, I don't do as much anymore. So it's nice to have that.
That's extra pretty cool. Set of hands.
Yeah.
When's the last time you did that? What did you do?
I just did a big Emerong excision the other day on this lady. She's been draining pus out of her face for probably 6 to 12 months. And so that was one of the bigger cases I did recently where I went in and debrided that and excised the fistula from her cheek. And so that was kind of interesting.
Did that with him or?
I just did that by myself in the OR, but That was an interesting case because I thought I'd get in there. I thought it was sequestering off and I'd get in there and remove like a loose piece of bone, but it honestly had just like melted away. So the there was a ton of granulation tissue and I was trying to excise the granulation tissue. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, that's the nerve. So all the bone around the nerve was gone and the nerve was just completely encased in granulation tissue. And so I was trying to, you know, work in and around and trying to get to, you know, healthy bone, trying to grind under the nerve. Like if I'd known I was like at that stage, that was like borderline, maybe resection territory, but it didn't look like it on the scan. So it was kind of fun. She's doing a lot better, except then she's wearing her denture that doesn't fit. That has no retention at all. So now she's got a new spot. And I'm like,
oh, man.
We just did all of that.
Oh, and now
the spot that we did surgery on is healing great. But
it is or isn't doing great?
It is.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the denture, now there's a new spot. So
when you do debridement of Emerange, for example, that one you could have even potentially used oxygen for that little nerve sheathing that they have. But do you place PRP with that or you just scoop it out, clean it out? Close it up, done with it.
I didn't. We're maybe a little behind in the technology, you know, Midwest and small town. So
no.
I'm not doing PRP right now, but it would be nice. I need to probably get a machine soon.
That's just one of the things we did when we could in residency. But then I don't know. I'm curious, is it really advantageous? Do patients really benefit from that over just getting everything out and closing it up? I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Like it can't
hurt. Always interesting. So you're going to the OR still? That's in the hospital, right?
Yeah, I go to the OR.
Yeah.
I'm always grumbly when I go to the OR. I like just being in my home, the clinic. But I hate turnover. I can't just really can't stand OR turnover time. So it just drives me nuts every time I'm over there. Like last time I was there, I try to be on time and I get there. And then they're like, oh, your case is delayed. I just texted you. And I'm like, I'm already here. What good did that do me?
How long ago did you text me?
You texted me 10 minutes before the time to tell me. Like, I should have been here by now, right? So what am I supposed to do now? So I don't know. It's kind of funny.
And then do they sometimes bring up the trace, the sterilization trace, and like their instruments missing or you got to...
Always.
Isn't that
That's
so
a thing,
annoying?
Right? The curse of the woman surgeon, right? Is that you're like the bitchy. My husband is like the sweetest, kindest. He's like everyone's favorite. And so he's in there and they're just like, Dr. Sheffield, he's the best. And then I come in like once a month and it's like, what do you mean we're running late? And what do you mean you don't have the consent form that I have a copy of in my folder here that you're making me do a second time? How come you don't have the most like basic thing, like my elevator? Like I use that on every patient. You know, how come you don't have this thing, right? I asked for it six months ago. How come we still don't? So I'm always just like,
yeah, but where do these things go?
And I feel like they're like, how is he married to her? You know, I'm trying to be patient and kind, but I'm just always in a pissy mood when I'm over there. So, yeah.
I think that's so normal though. That's right. I mean, it's so frustrating for us to come to the OR and they still haven't replaced this instrument we talked about 3 months ago. And then it affects the case. It affects the surgery.
Well, an assistant will be, I had an assistant literally once. I'm like, okay, I need you suctioning for me in the mouth. And before I knew it, she was standing at the feet. And to me, that was like passive aggressive, like, I'm not doing this. And I'm like, I'm not asking you to do anything crazy. I'm not throwing instruments. Like, can you just come and try, you know? So it makes it a little hard when you don't have that support to want to go do a big case. Like, how am I going to do a big case where I might need you to like hold some things in place while I drill these screws in, or, you know, when you won't even suction or they're suctioning the throat the whole time. And you're like, can you suction? Like, I'm trying to see, like, the throat pack's in there. So
the red stuff, get the red stuff.
Thanks. They're not like the awake patients. I'm glad you're sucking the back of their throat, but we don't need to worry about that right now. So it can be frustrating. I, you know, the surgeons are supposed to love the OR, but I just love being in my clinic and being in charge myself. You know, if I'm late, it's because of me.
Oh, but I would beg to differ. I would imagine that if all these surgeons on the medical side of healthcare, if they all had their own clinic and could do all these things that but could do like 90-95% of things there, I'm sure they would like that too. I mean, that turnover time, like you said, is ridiculous. There were some turnover times over an hour.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? What are we going to do all this time? And it's taking time off from the office to get over there to the hospital. I just found out. So I was asking some of the doctors, the colleagues in the practice, the other associates, where are we going to get hospital privileges, right? So we do the board certification, whoop-de-doo. And apparently other states, they pay you $5,000, maybe $7,000. I think they said a month to cover the hospital for call, or a year. No, I think it's a month. Mm-hmm. And on Long Island, there's no, you don't get paid anything to take call. In fact, they were saying one of these hospitals, you have to pay the application every single year to be put on the board, and they don't pay you anything. Wow. So we're just constantly paying the hospitals for privileges, but
the privilege.
No,
the privilege to
operate. Really privileged here.
No, it's frustrating. I don't take call right now for that reason, because it's for free and I want to do my duty to the community, but my husband's already taking call for free and that's disruptive enough. And how do you do it with two?
Yeah.
Or are we both on call? And then like in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. you leave the kids. If it just happens, like, what do you do? Or you have a babysitter on retainer and that's easy. Or we're on call not at the same time, so then we're always on call. Like, it's just, it's tricky. I feel like it's outdated to expect us to.
It's very tricky.
To give that without being compensated, especially when other specialties are being paid.
Yeah, that too. It's not right. Who would we go to for that? Would that be the AMOS committee, ABOMS committee?
And if your hospital administration is willing to play ball, you know, you
and
might have
them
to play hardball. They don't want, there's not much incentive unless, you know, you as a group like offer to leave, and especially if it changes their trauma status, etc. But
yeah.
No, it's tricky. And we've been battling those same battles at home. So if you figure it out, you let me know.
Right. It's just for our end, it's a constant losing battle. So why even do, I don't know. I'm trying to.
That's tricky.
Yeah. Trying to find the solutions, trying to figure out what's right, what's exciting.
Right now, I have courtesy privileges. So I don't take call, but, you know, I only can admit certain amount of patients per year. I honestly think if I started really using a lot, they wouldn't be too mad, 'cause business for them, you know, at some point they might say it's too many and you got to apply for regular, but I haven't really got to that point, luckily.
Right. And you were saying the assistant in the OR, so they give you an assistant when you're doing those cases in the OR in the hospital?
Well, just, you know, surge tech.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's tough.
You can bring your own. A lot of people bring your own. Like my partner, when he goes, he brings his own assistant, but then you're paying your assistant. You're paying your assistant. And that, you know, it's just,
and you're not getting paid.
Is that fair too, you know, because they won't train people. You have to pay your own person to come. It's just,
right.
We don't always fit. We don't fit perfectly. We're like a square peg, you know, trying to fit in a,
everywhere we go.
Circle, you know, where no one really knows who we are, or what we do, or how to help us, or how we can help them. You know, education goes a long way, but that's kind of tricky sometimes to maneuver as a dentist person.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dental. Yeah. Yes and no.
So do you get offended if people call you a dentist?
I don't care. Personally, I don't care. Because, you know, technically we came the dental route. I just explained to them, we do the surgery of dentistry.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you get offended?
I don't get offended. I'm proud to be a dentist roots and all that. The problem I have in the hospital setting or healthcare setting, I don't like to be called the dentist because it misrepresents who I am and what I'm doing. You know, so like I walk in and the anesthesiologist is like, good, the dentist is here. And I remember I had this big osteomyelitis case. This guy had been beat up and somehow didn't get his jaw fixed for probably like 4 or 5 days. And so by then he had this festering infection and I fixed his jaw, but he got osteo on both sides. So we had to go in and we ended up doing an X-fix for him just to try to get everything cleaned up. And so I'm doing, you know, facial orthopedic surgery. Like, what could be more visibly not dentistry than having like this huge pin contraption sticking out of your face, right?
Yeah, not great.
And the surge tech, the head of the surge techs, what don't you call him, the manager, whatever, came in and he was like, oh, the dental case. And they brought in the rheostat and the air water syringe and they were expecting me to use that, you know?
Like, thank you.
Yeah, dental, you know, so those kind of things, I don't like being called dental in that, you know, or you bring, oh, dentistry, as they roll the patient in the PACU. Like, after you just did a big case like that, then the nurse is just like, oh, it's just dental. And like, they aren't realizing how serious of a thing that you did to them. So for me, it's just like an education standpoint. But no, I'm not offended. Like, I know some people are, but I just think it doesn't adequately describe who we are, what we do, and I think that harms the patient sometimes.
I agree. Definitely in the hospital setting, and harms kind of that perspective of whether it be, you know, the PACU nurses, the pre-op nurses, the other providers. Yeah, because then they might just overlook it when it's like, no, this is actually serious. Like, you do need to monitor this patient. You can't just walk right by. It's not like they just had a tooth pulled. Yeah,
right.
No, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
And then to get things paid for when you're doing the hospital setting and in the office, are you solely insurances? You do fee for service? What's your kind of, if I can ask, if I can know what you're doing, what you're up to?
Yeah, we take most insurance in my office. I tried to take Medicaid. I wanted to do my part, but the state of Illinois is one of the worst as far as payments and all of that. So I was trying to do that, and I'm probably the only oral surgeon in Illinois that was. It's like a 5-hour train ride to where I am in Quincy, and I started getting people taking the train down from Chicago thinking they're going to get their surgery and take the train home after their sedation and stuff, you know, like, and when they sent me a 2-cent check, I was like, yeah, I can't.
Oh my God.
2 cents, like not even 2 cents on the dollar, but like 2 cents on the $100. Like I just, and that's if you even get paid, like it might take 3 years to get paid. And so I don't take.
You can't take it these days. Oh, man.
So sometimes I'll, you know what I do instead? Sometimes I'll find cases that I'll just donate. And that's what I choose to do instead, really? Instead of being forced to donate. Basically, you know, I take on cases that I want to donate, but
like
it's
that.
Tricky to yeah. maneuver. And yeah, we're not fee for service, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it helps patients to take their insurance. So I'm happy to do it.
That's a really good point too, to choose which cases you could do to donate rather than the whole hassle just to get nothing back. It's just a lose-lose with Medicaid. That's interesting. There's got to be a way. I don't know if that would be like a write-off or something where, sure, it's like you're donating your time to, let's take care of this patient. They need this and their insurance is garbage. But
I wish they would give you like significant write-offs. Like, it'd be a lot easier if like dollar for dollar, you could just write off the cases, you know, like, okay, you're not going to get paid, but you get some write-offs. Like that might be some incentive, but I don't think it really works that way, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't.
Tricky. I think it's not that we don't want to help people. I mean, like I said, a lot of us do, but we're running a business and how do you afford? You're not only not getting paid. That's one thing, but like people don't realize, like I'm losing money seeing you. I opened a tray and I used medications and I'm paying my staff, you know, so
right.
It actually costs money. And then I pay more taxes than most people. And so I'm like paying double. It's just tricky. I feel for the patients too.
Right. But then, yeah, I guess the point is when it gets to it's preventing you from treating more people and seeing other people when it's because obviously we want that's why I like the idea where you're saying it's like you're donating. Let's take care of this patient in this case rather than worrying about the hassle of Medicaid to just get nothing in return. That's where I think all the stress, the distraction, all the time and effort, the peer to peers, that's where it really takes away from treating more patients in the future. That's a really good point because it can't make that happen. Huh? No, that's. That's a good way to look at it.
So you are taking some time off before you start. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm technically off. Yeah, I'm off right now. I have this like course we're going to use. What office like scheduling, booking management systems do you use actually?
We run all of our charting through Epic.
Everything's through
and
Epic.
Then
okay.
Since Epic doesn't really have a dental.
They do know Epic like, Wisdom.
Do they? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's like $1 million. So they haven't sprung for it for just me yet. They didn't when we first started. Oh, we're using like Windent, like this really old version that we can't update because it's so old. So yeah, I don't have any recommendations there.
I will in the future. Right now, I mean, they're moving from OMS Vision to DSN. I don't know what's better, whatever. I've seen them both, I think, in many offices, but I don't know. It's DSN.
I was on DSN in a previous one and it was fine. Yeah.
I don't know. So what's going on the rest of the day? What are you doing? Are you with your kids the rest of the day too? Or?
Yeah, it's about dinner time. We've got a late softball game, which is fun for little kids.
Oh, nice. Wait, what do you mean a softball game? Softball. You're playing?
No, my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter has like an 8:30 p.m. softball game, which I just think is funny when bedtime's 7:30. So, you know, that will be fun to maneuver.
8:30, that's a late game for me. That is really late.
Yeah.
What time is it where you are now?
It's 5:30 here.
5:30, yeah. So then you got a couple hours. You usually eat dinner this early or it's just because the game's later?
We usually eat dinner pretty early just so we have time, you know, get that done and then spend some time with the kids or whatever activities running all around. And then once they're in bed, I'm working on my retreat business or the podcast that we're getting ready to launch.
All right. You got to tell me about this. Wait, so what retreat business? What that for that?
So last year, I launched with a couple of friends, a retreat for women oral surgeons called the Elevate Summit.
That's right.
It went really, really well. People loved it. Said it was life-changing. It was amazing. And so I rebranded and we kind of changed our leadership, but it's going to be called The Doctor Is All In now. So just getting ready for 2.0, making everything bigger and better. Just really excited to do that. I felt like, I don't know, we met at Amos, so I hate to say anything that sounds negative about Amos at all. I usually go to the Amos meeting every year, but I go to those events and there's so many people and I just feel like a face in the crowd and I'm kind of like hoping no one's on to me that I'm this imposter, you know? It's like, I'm just this mom, this part-time mom who lives in the middle of nowhere as far as everyone else is concerned, and I'm not putting implants in the fibula before I move it up to the face. Like, is that okay? You know, it's just, I feel like so much of it is very aspirational, but not really that helpful to me in my practice. Yeah. And the networking part is hard. It's hard to find people that like really feel like their story resonates with me or that, you know, I'm like connecting with them. I don't usually meet amazing people like you. So I just wanted to create like a whole new continuing education experience where you go and you leave feeling like recharged and refreshed and inspired with new friends. You're just a whole new, like full, all intensive meeting. So that's why it's called The Doctor Is All In, because we want to like help you in all parts of who you are. So your own personal wellness, your own social wellness, your practice development, etc.
Why the rebrand though? Because last year it was
Elevate Summit. Unfortunately, after we used the name, someone decided to put it under trademark. So that was a big push.
Someone put it under trademark. Was it someone there at the event put on a trademark?
No, I don't know who it was. Someone completely separate. And I wasn't super sold on the name anyway. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like we were ready for evolution and a rebrand anyway. So yeah, it's called The Doctor Is All In now.
There we go. Can everyone come? Is it just women?
It is just for women, unfortunately.
Okay, because the name's kind of deceiving me a little bit.
I know. It's not inclusive.
It's almost all.
Yeah. Well, it's about the doctor themselves as being all in, not all doctors being in.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the niche is women in oral surgery just because there's so few of us. And I think there are some extra layers of challenges.
Absolutely.
Being a woman, like we already talked about some of my challenges, which are very common. I think a lot of us are moms and business owners and all these layers of things that make it extra hard. And sometimes it's hard to find people that you can rely on. You know, like I have a partner, but I don't necessarily... I always feel like I could talk to him about things going on with me, you know? So just finding that support system, I think was really important. So it wasn't to leave out all of our friendly male colleagues, but more just to really lean into that niche. And I think other women, dentists or physicians or surgeons could come, and it's not like heavily academically oral surgery oriented. It's more peripheral stuff. So they could come, they're welcome to come if they desire, but we're really niching down for oral surgeons.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Yes. So this is the new one and you're going to have it again. When's the next event? Is it going to be at Amos or is there?
It is going to be in Austin, Texas at the Miraval Resort, February 27th through March 1st, 2026.
Nice. Congratulations. I didn't know that it was all set up and ready to go.
Oh yeah. We're launched. We're running our early bird pricing right now, $500 off. So thedoctorisallin.org is our website. If you want to check it out, if you have any questions, just let me know.
Yeah. I love amazing. This.
It's going to be really good.
And you are going to have something at Amos too, or nothing then?
I am speaking at Amos this year again, just digitally on demand. So I'll probably be there as well.
Great. Well, I'll see you there. All right. Now tell me about the podcast. Did that fully launch or that's in the making?
I honestly just need to upload it and launch. Everything's set. We've already recorded like 9 episodes. It's with my friend, Dr. Sarah Harding, who is amazing. She's a veteran. She's a mom of 2. She's an avocado farmer.
No way. Avocados.
Really a lot of fun and offers some really fun insights. So we've got some really great episodes already on the docket. I just need to bite the bullet and
Harding.
Get it uploaded.
DMD Sarah Harding?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Karma surgeon. Wait, that's awesome. I love that. She should definitely put avocados in. Who doesn't like avocado? I mean, they're the little cute.
I know. She lives on a farm. She's living the dream, the absolute dream.
You've done 9 episodes with her? And you haven't posted any yet?
Well, I was going to post and then we decided to launch this retreat. And so it just kind of fell on the back burner, but it's really close. It's called the Resting Stitch Face. So keep an eye out in the next couple weeks.
Great. What are you waiting for? You have 9 episodes. After you post them, you run it through ChatGPT, right? So you're using Riverside, right? It gives you the transcript.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Use the stuff on the side, narrow it down. So it takes out like, what does it say? Find the fluff I don't do. It's where it's like remove ums and ahs, you know, all those buttons on the side. I don't use all of them, but I use, you know, whatever you do. Then refresh because it'll cut things out in the transcript.
Right? Oh, okay.
And then it'll take that out. And then copy and paste the transcript into ChatGPT, copy and paste the titles and chapters into ChatGPT, and then ask ChatGPT to extract what you want from that. Like I like to ask, what are some prominent quotes from the podcast? I like to ask what questions were asked so people can follow along. And then simplify those down to the top 10, maybe 20, and put all that, make your caption of that in like a copy and paste, you know, template, put on the caption, boom, make your thumbnail. And then you turn that into, that could take like 2 hours to do all that, right? But with ChatGPT, you can get it down to like 30 minutes.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah, boom, boom, boom. You got to get these episodes.
I mean, we'll be there a week earlier after that tip. We're ready. We just need to bite the bullet.
Yeah, by the time you post these things, it's going to be 2026.
I know.
So,
but when we do, we're going to be ready. Like we're already ready. I already got 9 episodes ready to go.
Yeah.
This is the real deal. This is not us just saying.
Are you going to do like one a day? You're going to do one a week? Do you know when you're going to post? Have you like?
Hopefully weekly. I haven't decided yet. Maybe Tuesdays.
I would.
When do you?
Yeah.
Do you just do when you feel like it?
I do whenever I can get to it. I post as much and as quickly as possible and
love that.
Go from there. But I'm trying to make things as quality as possible. But, yeah, minimum one a week. That'd be great. That'd be a good time.
It's going to be good.
When I get you on again soon, can we have Sarah too, just so I could see both your guys' dynamic? And
oh, yes.
Resting stitch faces?
I mean, we're a little cheeky. We're pretty authentic. We're not really, I would call it more a lifestyle blog. We're talking more maybe like you. Like we're not talking about what's your technique for wisdom teeth as much as, you know, just talking about living life as a surgeon and how crazy it is.
So you do that too. I mean, because we could talk into, you know, technique of removing wisdom teeth, but it's also like, you know, you could read a textbook about that or watch all these YouTube videos.
Right. I mean, after you've done it a million times, I don't really know why you have to rehash it over and over.
Right. That's, we could spend 3 minutes and chat about it, but like, I don't know. I find other people, they want to get to know you. They want to get to know Dr. Sheffield. You know what I mean? So
yes, they do. They clearly do.
Meet the person behind the mask. So. Well, hey, thanks for coming on today. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This will be, I guess technically this is part one because we had our podcast last year, but that was all of us. That was Dr. Wahan. That was Dr. Jackie. So this is our part one. Nice.
Yeah, great. Love it.
All right. Well, I'll let you get going. Hope you you have fun at the softball game tonight.
Thank you. Good luck with all the practice transition. I will say I am proud of you for taking time off because everyone rushes into it. Mm-hmm. It's like such a habit. We're like, bred to be workaholics. So everyone, it's like July 1st, you're there. And then it's like, ooh, this very awkward holiday is messing up my first week, you know? Like, how dare it? And we can't even like, maybe I'll just wait until July 5th. No, none of us will do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of learned my lesson. Now that I'm in it, I'm like, man, I would love to take a month long vacation or just take some time to get like settled and stuff. And so I tell everyone, take some time. And they always balk at me. No, how could I? I could never. I've got to make all this money that I've been working so hard to try to make, or I don't know. You know, it's just been driven into you so much, and you never get this opportunity again to be able to just be free and not have people, patients waiting on you, or money
not or yelling at you,
bills getting accumulated, and staff needing to be paid. You know, like so, like take a month, take 2 months, take a couple. Take a couple days at least. Wait until July 7th, you know. That's always my recommendation. No one ever, ever, ever takes that. So good job to you listening to my advice after the fact.
I mean,
you figured out a gamble even. Yeah. Well, that's a thing too. That's not uncommon for your license to take forever. And then you're just like in limbo. Like, just relax. Take some time. Get moved in if you're moving. Find yourself again. Get some rest. Go on a trip. You just... You know, take some time for you. Figure out who you are again, because you don't know who you are probably outside of residency anymore. And it's going to take some time to figure that out.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Oh, you're going to be thinking now, who am I anymore?
Who are you? I mean, these are big, big questions.
All right, Dr. Sheffield, thanks so much for coming on today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was great to see you.
You too. You too. Well, I'll see you in the DM. I'll be chatting with you in the DM.
Sounds good. Good luck to everything. I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you. And you too. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Good night.